Hello and welcome to the IRPP's Interview with the Author series. My name is Nicola Johnston, and today we are joined by my guests Isabel Galliana and Christopher Green. Christopher Green is a professor of economics at McGill University, and Isabel Galliana is a PhD candidate at McGill and is an advisor to the Quebec Minister of Environment. They are the authors of the new study, A Technology-Led Climate Policy for Canada, published by the Institute for Research on Public Policy. We join them today in Montreal and in Cambridge. Welcome, Isabel and Christopher.
Thank you
very much.
So, Christopher, I'll first start off by asking you, your study looks at how Canada can best contribute to reducing global greenhouse gas emissions, and you start off by citing some of the inherent flaws in the current thinking about adopting emission reduction targets. So can you tell us what is the problem with the way we're currently approaching the reduction of GHGs?
Okay. Well, I'll set out a few points here. First, emission reduction targets, especially when date-specific, presume erroneously, we think, that we have the energy technologies to achieve them. Second, in the absence of the requisite low-carbon energy technologies, attempting to meet ambitious emission reduction targets could be very costly, likely prohibitively so. Third, sticking to strict emission reduction targets could accentuate an ongoing shift of emissions and emission-intensive activities to other parts of the world, especially emerging economies such as China, India, Brazil, and the like. And I might note that this is especially evident in the European Union, the set of countries that have taken emission reduction targets most seriously. While some EU members have actually reduced their production of emissions, they have not reduced the emissions embedded in the goods and services they consume, including those from imports. So, in effect, emissions have been transferred from countries that have been that seem very anxious to achieve emission reduction targets measured in production terms. They have been transferred to other countries, and then imports or trade between countries allows the EU members to continue to maintain their standard of living. Fourth, for Canada to meet Kyoto-style emission reduction targets would at best have virtually no impact on global emissions. But agreeing to them and then failing to meet the targets and or attempting to do so at great cost would set a very poor example for the rest of the world. So we think that Canada needs to look elsewhere if it wishes to make a real contribution to slowing the growth and then reducing global emissions of greenhouse gases.
So on that note, your study suggests that we need to put the technology development egg, so to speak, before the emission reduction chicken. So can you tell us about this alternative way forward for Canada, which you describe as a Canadian technology-led climate change?
Surely. In our study, we show that the technology challenge to substantial reductions in global emissions is huge, that there's a very large technology gap between where we are now and a world with the technologies to achieve low greenhouse gas emissions. Second, for this reason, policies that put the emission reduction chicken ahead of the technology development egg are highly likely to fail. A failure that perhaps can be best understood by noting that the emission reduction target policy accents the emission reduction ends while largely ignoring the means, the technology means, to achieve those ends. So this means, the fact is that we need an energy technology revolution requiring many energy technology breakthroughs, and climate policy should reflect this fact. Now, some say we should use carbon pricing as the means of achieving deep emission reductions. Now, it is true that carbon prices can induce deployment of technologies or new technologies that are already on the shelf, ready to go. But carbon pricing is highly unlikely to be of much help where technological breakthroughs require time-consuming, uncertain of success, upfront investments in basic research and development, followed by their testing and demonstration. And by the way, if they succeed, many of the benefits that are generated for them cannot be appropriated by those who made the initial investments because it's very hard to attach intellectual property or patents to basic scientific knowledge. So in these cases, a technology development must take the lead. Now, in our study, we propose using a carbon tax, but a very special one, a very low carbon tax or fee to provide the required funding for a technology-led climate policy, rather than as a means of reducing emissions directly. That is to say, we would use a low tax as a financing mechanism rather than higher carbon taxes as a means to aggressively attack emissions themselves. And the low tax or fee that we had in mind is $5 per ton of carbon dioxide, and which could be over time allowed to very slowly rise. Now, just to give an idea, $5 is equivalent to 1 cent per liter of gasoline, or 22 cents per 1,000 cubic feet of natural gas, or if you do this in cubic meters, it's $8.10 per 1,000 cubic meters. So it is a very low fee or tax indeed, and its purpose is one that can be directly attached to financing the technological breakthroughs from which, by the way, not only if they're successful can emissions eventually be reduced, but there often are very important spillovers to other technologies for which we and others would be big gainers.
So on that low tax financing fee, Isabel, can you give us some of the specifics on the cost of a slow rising carbon tax?
Sure. So when we think about a carbon tax, we need to think about why we're taxing the carbon, or rather, why does the government impose any tax and what are the associated costs? So, for example, when the government imposes income taxes, they're taxing something that we value, that's to say labor or hours worked, and they do this to raise revenue, to fund important public goods like roads or hospitals. But there's a cost associated with taxing labor because it's something we value, and the tax reduces the amount of labor in the economy. So when we tax something that's good, there are costs associated. But when we tax carbon emissions, we're taxing a bad, something that's produced in excess, because it's not part of the market economy. In other words, there is no cost to producers to emit damaging emissions, but society has to pay for the undesirable consequences in terms of climate change. So this carbon tax reduces emissions, and in doing so is a benefit to the economy. In other words, there are no economic costs to a low carbon tax. If the tax were very high, well, then there could be potential costs, but that's not the case here. And I might add, as Professor Green was saying, that the recycling of the tax revenues into low-carbon R&D will generate lower costs in reducing emissions through cleaner technologies, jobs in the R&D sector, and spillovers to other sectors, all of which increase the benefit of the tax. So it's really win-win.
And so finally, what about current climate policies that are in place? So if this alternative way forward were to be adopted tomorrow, what happens with existing policies? Do they just fall by the wayside?
No, absolutely not. Of course not. Technology-led approach is perfectly compatible with most, if not all, policies already in place. There's no reason not to maintain efficiency policies, public transit policies, bonus-malus incentive programs. All of these are already having good results within the technologies available. The one type of policy that would need to be adjusted to a tech-led approach is any carbon pricing mechanism, for example, the BC carbon tax or the Quebec cap and trade program. A dual pricing mechanism could result in very high carbon prices that could then result in serious economic consequences, and that's what we're trying to avoid here through a tech-led approach. Generally, these alternate policies address the need of a particular sector also, as in feed-in tariffs for energy sector or accelerated depreciation or subsidies for the industry. The problem is that they are limited by the technologies available, and as Professor Green has pointed out, these limitations can be quite significant. And while one could argue about the merits of any one existing policy, the adoption of a tech-led approach supports all of the current policies by providing better technological options. And when I say better, I mean cost competitive and low carbon. The federal and provincial governments have undertaken many, many measures to support the transition to a low carbon economy with minimal results, honestly. Emissions have increased nationally since 1990 and have only begun to level off recently, in large part due to the slowing of the economy. tech-led approach would definitely not interfere with these policies, but could provide cheaper, low-carbon technologies, not only within Canada, but to the world. And this is really the key. If we're concerned about climate change, we need to be thinking about how we can reduce emissions at a global scale while developing the Canadian economy. And the sale of Canadian low-carbon technologies certainly does that. And the best way that we can think of doing it is through a tech-led approach.
Well, thank you very much to both of you for your time today.
Our pleasure.
Our pleasure, yes.
Christopher Green is professor of economics at McGill University, and Isabelle Galliana is a PhD candidate at McGill and is an advisor to the Quebec Minister of the Environment. They are the authors of the new study, A Technology-Led Climate Policy for Canada, published by the Institute for Research on Public Policy. We join them today in Montreal and in Cambridge. And, of course, you can download the study free of charge from our website at www.irpp.org.